Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is known as The Heist. Formerly worked in surveillance, now plays sports and poker. The Heist, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor.
All right. You worked for 5 years in surveillance. What part of the country did you work in, and what did you do?
I worked in Southern California for a really big casino out there. I was in surveillance, just catching card counters for the first 3 years, then started doing data mining for the last two, and that's when I decided to leave after it got boring.
So when you say data mining, what does that mean?
The director at our place was taking the old school surveillance out of the picture and trying to use computers to catch bartenders, table ratings, other stuff that the old surveillance agents were not used to.
So the focus was on catching, I mean, bartenders, I get, but when you say table rating, so they were concerned that
the floor people were
overrating their friends,
yes. And we caught plenty of those, as well as plenty of bartenders.
Wow. And so what were they looking for? Just a particular boss whose ratings, all of his players seem to have higher average bets?
Exactly. You can take the last name of each floor person and just data mine their whole ratings for the month, for the week, for the day, and average them out and see that their ratings are way higher than all the other floor people's ratings.
Wow. But not the dealers?
No, zero on the dealers. The dealers don't swipe in, so you don't really know who's dealing.
And the dealers run from table to table.
Exactly, every 30 minutes. And the floor people, when they're on six tables, they swipe into every single little iPad they have to table rate the players, so we know exactly who's doing the rating.
And would they fire the floor people or give them a warning?
No, fire. Yeah.
Fire them.
Yeah. There was one time where we caught one floor person meeting a player at the gas station. The player was giving the floor money and paying for gas with the card.
Wow.
Yeah.
What about cheating? I mean, so actually, let me step back for a second. What percentage of the time are the people in surveillance looking for card counters or other table games players?
It's really low. Low, it's one person maybe per shift looking at table games.
And is that prompted by somebody in the pit calling?
Yes, at times. So like in a shift, let's say there's four or five agents in there, including the supervisor. Out of all those four, there's maybe one person proactively looking at table games. The other ones are picking up phone calls, looking at cages, looking at slots, looking at
Bartenders,
yes, table ratings. And there's one guy looking at blackjack. And he might not even be looking at blackjack. He's looking at craps.
I was going to say, what about the other table games?
Yeah.
Are they concerned with the other table games at all?
Whatever that person wants to look at, it's his choice.
Girls that are playing roulette, that's where his focus is?
That's where he's probably going to be watching, yes. We have one guy, all he does is pull up UTH, 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 UTH on all his four cameras. It's all he's watching is UTH the whole like shift.
Why UTH?
Because he likes UTH. He likes to play it.
Now, do you ever get calls from the pit about any of those other games?
Yeah, but for once in a while, we'll get a call from one of the sharp floor people. And say,
the percentage of sharp floor people is what?
At that place was two.
Two out of
floors,
all the shifts?
Out of all the shifts. When I got a call from so-and-so and so-and-so, I knew the call was real.
And would they call about other than card counting?
No.
That's the only thing.
Hey, can you guys take a look at BJ, 16, seat 3? Looks like he's counting. Can you guys do a rundown?
And you mentioned that there were very few people in the room that could that knew how to count cards or anything. Right. But so did they use software to?
No, so they everybody in the room knows how to count cards. Okay, they know how to use the software that we have, which is an Excel sheet. One of our guys made an Excel sheet and for us, and that's what we use. So anybody could do it, right? Because you just plug in numbers to the Excel sheet and it pops up. So you would do a rundown on that person, and you do, they want 3 positive shoes, 3 negative shoes to make it a complete.
It could take a long time to get 3 positive shoes.
Every time you got called, it's like, please let it be double deck. Can you imagine a shoe game?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, and you don't get credit for it.
What do you mean?
If we catch them, the floor person's going to get the credit. We're just doing all the work. Like, at the end of the day, you're not going to get, like, attaboy or something like that. You know?
Wow. Mean? So, do you sometimes just blow it off and go, he's fine?
Maybe.
So does it take an hour to do six shifts, 6 shoes?
Oh, more than that.
Yeah.
So
because
at your casino, no counter on shoe games could be pinpointed in less than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So people who went in there daily for 50 minutes, or is it?
Well, if you went in and only played one positive shoe.
Exactly.
If you just went in and played until you got a positive shoe, you could. Mm. It sounds like you could play there forever.
You could back count, you know, forever and never get caught.
Would they go like day to day? Like, can you bring up this guy for the last few days or whatever? And
you could go back if he.
But no floor man's going to think of that, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so. Like I told you before, we were on air. A lot of the public, or you know, sometimes us, like you guys, card counters, think that we're just watching you guys. We're not.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
2 big stories in Southern California during the time that you were there were the Tran organization, who hit a lot of those casinos, and Archie Karras, you know, getting caught for marking cards.
Yeah.
Were either of those, did they pass through your casino when you were there?
No.
Archie had to pass through all the casinos.
Yeah. That's probably true, but maybe he just never was picked up.
Yeah, we never got video of it or anything. Because I went back through all the archives after like being there for 2 years, I'm like, man, let's see what they have caught in the past, you know? And it was nothing special.
Was there anybody there who was capable of picking up on if people were cheating at table games?
Cheating meaning hole carding?
Yeah.
No, that's not cheating. That's
I'm talking
about actual cheating.
There's one supervisor. He never wants to be a manager. He came from Asia, Macau, or one of those big places. He mentored me for like the first 3 years. He's capable of catching anything. That guy is sharp. But, you know, he's 60 and he's just there, you know, hanging out, retired.
Yeah.
And putting all that money into his 401k, because they have a really good 401k there.
Because, I mean, you know, you're catching bartenders and bosses with ratings and stuff. But if a dealer has an agent coming in, you know, I mean, they can dump off a lot of money to an agent. Yeah. But
I did catch a dealer dumping out money to all players to get extra tips.
They get their own tips there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that... I mean,
I ended up going to court because he fought it.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go to court and like testify and give examples and use videos.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a weird, and I didn't want to go, but, you know, I had no choice. The DA, I met with him a couple times and stuff to go over the report.
Did your casino have facial recognition software?
No. I think all that's BS, honestly. I've been to, so, you know, G2E and World Game Protection?
Yeah.
So they would send me to a bunch of those every year, you know. Every 1 year I'd go to one. And so we don't have it, and I don't know any other casino that's at it. And I've been to plenty of casinos on the Strip.
Huh.
All the big-name casinos. I've been in their surveillance room. Because when they come, you know, the directors are buddy-buddies. you show me your surveillance room, I'll show you mine, that type of thing.
Because I keep hearing about how, like, the MGM properties supposedly have improved their facial recognition, that it's working.
I would bet against it. I would bet that no casino has facial recognition, but that's just me.
Well, there are some that have it, whether it works or not.
We have it, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. I would take that bet.
Really?
I got
that it works?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, certainly there are a lot of players that now believe it works.
We have it. The Biometrica that you put in the, like, whatever points on your face, that thing,
never worked. Biometrica, yeah, a lot of people said that was worthless. But yeah, it's changed a lot in the last few years, I think.
It's been 3 years since I left, so maybe.
Yeah. Well, also, the newer places, you know, you got to spend a lot of money to put that stuff in, you know. So the older places, I think, are less willing to spend the money to upgrade or whatever.
Yeah. There was also this one, we did catch them cheating on craps one time.
Oh, how were they doing that?
They did it for 2 days. They got us for 140,000 in 2 days.
Wow.
What were they doing? Wait. This is in Southern California. Is this cards?
It's cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was my day off. I came in on my Monday.
At that casino, they used two decks of cards. The casinos that used one down at
two continuous shuffling machines, right?
Yes.
Okay.
To this day, I'm still not 100% sure how they did it, but I'm 80% sure of. Because of that Asian guy. I'm going to give all the credit to him. I ended up taking the credit. So these two guys come in. One young kid, 30 years old maybe. Then the BP, who's like 60-something. And the cards come out of the shoe, of the shuffler. And one stays on the top while everyone waits and puts in their bets. So the kid was next to the shuffler, was able to read the mark on that card, because whatever the top card is, that's the card they're going to flip over to be one side of the dice. So let's say there's a little black mark on the E or on the right corner of the card. So he knows that's the 6. So you could bet accordingly knowing one die.
How would the marks get on the cards?
The shuffler.
You think the shuffler put the marks on the cards?
That's what I think. And we ended up getting the cards. And yeah, the shufflers do mark cards, you know, especially if they're there for hours and hours and hours.
Huh.
But how would the shuffler mark a 6 card different than a 2 card?
It's just there were like little black scuffs on them. We've seen them. I mean, like poker cards always sometimes get marks.
Huh. And so what did they do to the guys?
The funny thing is, they didn't know what was happening until they ended up just leaving.
And then they never came back.
They never came back, got away free. And the table game director, the VP, the surveillance director, they didn't know what was going on. So me and that Asian guy, the guy that mentored me, got the cards. He's like, Tom, let's go look over here. You know, so we got the cards. We went into some room, put the black light on, couldn't find nothing. And then it just hit him. He's like, dude, all these ones are marked differently. That damn kid knew exactly what card was. You know, he memorized. If it's marked on the bottom left of the card, that's the 4, you know. Every single card had a different mark.
So it never occurred to you that...
I don't think a shuffling machine would mark cards differently.
Well, it never occurred to you that maybe somebody in the pit or something had something to do with the cards getting marked?
No, because it was more like a shuffler's mark. What, sometimes they get smudges on them. I've seen it plenty of times, you know, where someone's
Well,
like,
but I would argue that if that were true, then they weren't cheating.
No. Well, yeah, so they're not cheating. It was just a good AP move, right? Exactly. Yeah, they weren't cheating. But, yeah, that was a good one. And then I brought it to the attention of the director of surveillance, the VP, and they were like, holy smokes, you know? And then one guy had thought it was a shuffler. You can hear the shuffler because it was only 7 cards it was shuffling. So you can hear the shuffler, and he was able to time it. But I'm like, come on, you can't hear that. Relax.
7 cards?
Yeah.
Why would there be 7? Aren't they the 1 through 6?
Oh, I'm sorry. 1 through 6. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was only 6 cards on
one blue. Yeah, in a noisy casino, yeah, it'd be awfully hard to hear the...
It was one blue deck, one red deck. So you take the top from the red. And so, all the dealers got fired.
So 2 1s could not come out in a row?
Why did the dealers get fired? What did they do?
They weren't supposed to let people bet once the cards were up.
Oh.
The whole shift got fired. The box, the floor. Yeah, because somebody, I guess, had to. You know, we were on hot water for a long time after that. Yeah, it was a mess. I came in from my death. I'm like, what the heck happened? They're like, these guys came in. And so who knows if I was there, if the Asian, you know, my friend was there. I don't know. It was his day off, too. So who knows? Would I have caught it? Probably not. I don't know.
I think those things are much easier to figure out after the fact when you have a lot of time to look at the tape and think about it.
100%.
So what other kind of training did they send you to? Other than you mentioned you went to G2E.
Yeah.
And the World Game Protection. How did you find those seminars? Did you find them worthwhile or?
G2E was just a vacation.
Right. Yeah, you're just looking at all the new...
Yeah, that was just like, I wanted to go to G2E every time just so I can come to Vegas and stay in a really nice hotel. They put us up at the Wynn, you know, do some sports betting, play some poker, and then... Yeah, but World Game was nice. World Game, you were able to learn a lot of stuff, you know, if you picked the right classes. And then I also went to Bill Zender's class. One time they had it here at the Paris, I believe, or something like that. One of those casinos. That was a nice class as well.
But do they pay any attention? Like, one of the things that Zender talks about a lot is game speed and that you should put really deep cuts in your shoes. But do they pay attention to any of that?
Honestly, no.
Yeah.
I just took it and I would make... come back with notes and tell my, you know, my managers, this is what I learned. This is what I think we should do. And that was it.
And then they would ignore it.
They'd be like, all right, lunchtime. I'd like give it to them. They're like, all right, thank you.
So did they ever catch cashiers cheating or change girls? I don't know.
They have change girls anymore. I think that's a thing of the past.
No,
right?
At my time there, we never got a cashier cheating.
Now...
Mostly bartenders.
Mostly bartenders and dealers and floor people.
So if you were in Southern California, then that meant you worked at a tribal casino. Now, when we have Bob Nersessian on this show, he talks about the difference of being caught for cheating in a tribal casino versus a non-tribal casino. Did you follow up on any of the prosecution or... Like when somebody's harassed a player and they bring in outside lawyers to sue, do you have any idea of how it was different at the tribal casinos versus non-tribal? Or?
No, I wouldn't say I'm an expert in that or nothing like that. No.
Well,
I couldn't tell you what they did.
As far as cheating goes, you mentioned that you went to court to testify against somebody who was cheating, but that was... Not a tribal court, right? That was
a regular court.
I believe that if you cheat on an Indian casino, I think you're breaking a federal law. I think. So, sounds like that's how the prosecution went in that case. But anyway, but the whole tribal law thing, because it... non-tribal people can't be prosecuted by a tribal court. So, like, tribal laws do not apply to non-tribal people.
Uh-huh. All right. So that was 3 years ago. Then you decided for some reason to give up surveillance. Is this because you got fired or because you got bored with it? And what happened next?
No, I didn't get fired. They were shocked. Well, the funny thing is, I was trying to put a leave of absence because NFL was coming up, and I was at this point really getting deep into betting sports, just making way more money betting sports than I was at my job, and playing poker on the side at this time. And I'm like, you know what? I came up with this master plan. I'm going to say that so-and-so happened and I need 3 months off of work and unpaid is fine. And I try to put that in and they rejected it. They're like, what are you talking about? You're not taking no leave of absence. I'm like, what? Why not? And then I'm like, at that point, I'm like, you know what? I'm just out of here. I'm out. And they were shocked that everybody was shocked. My coworkers, my supervisors. I talked to my wife about it, and she's always supported me in everything I did. I worked at UPS for a while, for 5 years. I left that place to go work at a casino. You know, UPS was a good job.
Yeah, actually, that surprises me. I mean, the casino job was better than the UPS job.
At that time, I was going to pay a little bit more. I was working at the warehouse at UPS.
Not a driver.
So I love that UPS job. You know, it was like you would work a lot of hours, so you'd rack up good money. But I just took a risk. I'm like, you know what? I'm getting tired of UPS. I like gambling. Let me get into this. And I was looking up. I'm like, wow, they're hiring. They must be desperate because they only want 1 year of experience. So I was working part-time at loss prevention at a Kmart just so I can have 1 year experience of surveillance. So I did that, and I jumped ship at UPS, went to the casino. So she's like, whatever you want to do, I'm there for you. So I'm like, great. And then I was telling her I'm getting tired of the casino. They're going away from what I liked, you know, which was catching card counters and doing AP stuff. They're doing all this stuff. She's like, do what, you know, whatever you think is right, go for it. And I said, I think I got this poker and sports betting thing going pretty good. And we just had a baby and I'm working graveyard. I can't sleep at night or during the day. She said, I got your back, whatever, you know. And so I said, you know what? Screw it. NFL's coming up. I can't be working Sundays. I can't be working Saturdays because of college football. And I just told them I'm out. And they were shocked. I said, all right. And that's it.
And so the sports betting is going well.
The sports betting this year actually did really well. Poker was doing really well. When I first quit, poker was like at my peak. And then started getting tired of that. Dove into sports betting even more and seemed more convenient. I could do it from my house, you know? So little by little, I was going away from poker.
Tell us how you did it from the house, living in Southern California. Offshore.
Offshore, online. Yeah. You know, a lot of local bookies. So with really slow websites that you can pick off. And by this point, I'd established a relationship with a lot of those guys, you know. So I had a lot of a long leash, you know. If I go on a good run, they're going to, you know. And I brought in people as well. So my leash was pretty long with a lot of those guys. I was just working from home. And I noticed when I was playing poker, I was starting to play less and less because I was getting lazy, because now you got to drive 45 minutes to go play and sit in.
Oh, so you weren't playing online. You were playing live.
I was playing live. So now you got to drive an hour, 45 minutes and go play with annoying people, you know, where I just won X amount of money from my couch. And I'm just like, oh, I'm just not going to go today. And it ended up adding up. And then I'm like, man, I need some kind of scheduling. I'm like getting lazy. So that's when I looked around and I'm like, I'm going to be a prop player part-time. So now I'm a prop player part-time for like work 3 days, you know, sometimes four if they really need me.
Does that get you health insurance or anything? Or?
No. My wife's got all the health insurance. She just started working. So I love it. I just go in 3 days. At least I have some kind of schedule, you know.
To get you out of the house.
Exactly. Two kids, a wife. Yeah. It's worked perfect. I love it.
Huh. And have you suffered any kind of major losing streak that your wife started to get cold feet?
No, no. Luckily, really? Yeah. Actually, when I first started, yeah, but I didn't tell her. You know, I kept that close to the vest. I don't tell her how. I just tell her we're doing good. You know, it was a bad week. That's it. If I tell her the number, she'll flip out.
Now you had a cash in this year's big super contest. Quite a substantial cash. Now, do you tell her about that?
Yeah. She was sweating that one. That was a good one. Because for a minute there, I thought I had a really good chance at first place, which is close to 1.5 million. That's like 1.4 something. So, yeah, that was a good sweat for our whole family.
But you end up not getting that, but still a substantial paycheck.
Yeah, it was bittersweet. Yeah, I came in fifth place. We, four of us tied four ways for $163,000 each. Like I said, it was bittersweet because going into week 16, I got my first 5-0 week in week 15. That was my first 5-0, and I jumped up to fourth place, which was only 1.5 points back of first. So I peaked. I'm peaking at the right moment. I, you know, came from 15th up to 9th up to 6th, and finally, boom, I'm in 4th place, 1.5 points back of 4th, a first, sitting on 200,000. All I need to do is just go 4-4, and I'm, you know, top 2, go 3-3, and I stay probably where I'm at. And of course, week 16 comes. I get my worst week of the season. 1.5 points, fall all the way down to like 7th place, 60,000. I'm depressed for a good 2 days. I'm just like, I can't believe I blew this. I just lost all this for our family. Just thinking about it makes me like, oh, you know. And then luckily, I bounced back the last week, went 4-1, had to sweat out that Niner game. And yeah, the rest is history. Fifth place.
All right, we got some more questions to ask you about both sports betting and poker playing. But first, we're going to take a commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 90%. More than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, they have the $500,000 spin to win. Every Monday through Thursday, earn up to 4 spins a day by playing $500 at slots or $2,000 at video poker per spin. In past years, the spin has been $12 on average, which means video poker players are getting a 0.6% boost. This is three times points because single points at the South Point is 0.3%. They get this on the first $8,000 they play 4 days a week for 4 weeks. If you're taking advantage of the entire promotion, it requires 128,000 coin in for the month, which is a lot more than most people play. But for the 0.9% bonus added to games that start out pretty good, a lot of people are going to stretch to do that. On January 20th, Martin Luther King Day, there'll be a $32,000 hot seat promotion between 8 a.m. and midnight. Approximately every 3 minutes, one person playing with their card inserted, having played at least $1 coin in over the past minute, receives $100 in free play. The next semester of free video poker classes is right around the corner, beginning Tuesday, January 14th. First game is Jacks or Better. This is the basic game. It provides a foundation of how you play bonus poker, double bonus poker, triple double bonus poker, all of the games based on Jacks or Better. So that's going to be the first week. Beginning classes start at noon. Intermediate classes start at 2. Classes are free in the Silverado Lounge, which is the first lounge you come to inside from the parking garage. And if you're at least 21 years old, you're welcome. At Predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events. mostly but not entirely based on the United States. There are a number of different bets on whether or not Trump will be removed from office, or who the Democratic nominee is going to be, or will Trump finish out his first term. Gambler with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com, excellent site for those of you who wish to become successful at counting cards at blackjack. They have a variety of training processes. Colin Jones posts a number of videos on YouTube.com where you can check out if his teaching style works for you. If it does, there are a number of very informative videos behind the paywall. At VideoPoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. An additional membership, Pro membership, is sold separately. It's $6.95 a month or $49.95 a year, or if you already have the Gold membership, it's $3 extra a month. The biggest advantage to the Pro membership is it corrects you on every pay schedule of Ultimate X, Triple Play and Five Play, and Quick Quads. If you play one of these games, it's the best place to get correctable strategy where every possibility of the hand and sum of multipliers is given to you. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a free trial of 1,000 hands at videopoker.com/GWAE. This allows you to find out whether or not the information provided is useful to you. Okay, we're back to talking to the heist.
I wanted to jump in and go back to surveillance for a second. You mentioned that they were really focused on data mining. Do they data mine the players to look for players that might have a long-term lifetime win? Any of that kind of stuff going on?
No, they don't train them for that.
Good to know. Good to hear.
Yeah. Like I said, you know, advantage players think we're just looking for them, but they're not. They're looking for internal stuff.
What about red flags? I mean, were there things that stood out that made you decide to look at somebody rather than the bartender?
Me in general, I never looked at bartenders. I was never data
mining.
Well,
yeah, you were more a table games guy, right?
But, yeah, some red flags, I guess, if someone's playing really high stakes blackjack and, you know, just your eyes draw to that, like, whoa, this guy's betting, you know, 5,000 a hand. So in general, you just zoom your cameras towards that way. And then you could, you know, people take looks at a couple shoes. And that's it, pretty much.
What about, do they care if people don't use a player's card?
Surveillance doesn't.
Would you get calls, though, from the pit saying, hey, this guy is playing and he's not using a player's card?
No.
Okay, so they don't care?
No.
Okay.
Like I said, it's up to the sharp floors to look for that, which ends up being the supervisors, not the floor people. The floor people are like dealers. They move every, you know... Okay, now you're going to this pit. Now you're going to this pit. They don't just stay at the same pit the whole time. So it's just like dealers, you know. They're just minding their own business. They're going every 30 minutes. They're trying to get as much cash as they can. And they're not looking for, you know.
Yeah, they don't care.
They're just
putting in their hours.
And I think the floor is the same way. They don't care, you know, unless you're trying to move up.
Richard asked a question a few minutes ago about whether or not they were concerned with the lifetime win of the player. It occurs to me that the slot department is interested, and the slot player tracking system is totally separate from surveillance. So the slot department can make those decisions based on what you do on a video poker machine and restrict you which would not be of in, through the surveillance at all.
Actually, I just remember now that you said that. We would get reports at the end of the shift from the table game shift manager saying, so-and-so won X amount. Can you take a look at him next time he comes in? That's the only thing, you know. Or so-and-so won this much the last three trips. Can next time he comes in, can you guys take a look at him? That's it. But so table games initiates that. Surveillance doesn't say, so-and-so won this much. Let's look at him. You know, right. They're more reactive than proactive.
If you get that report and the guy comes in the next time, so you look at him and he plays one shoe and he wins a bunch and you go, you know what? He was betting with the count, but it was only one shoe. What happens then? Nothing?
That's red flag.
Oh, but you need three positive shoes.
Right. But I can swing it. If I, let's just say I have an instinct like this guy knows what he's doing, I can, you know, bring that up to my manager's attention and then, or the table games person. Because the table games shift manager usually comes in and when we have something good on somebody or they're interested in someone, they come to the surveillance room and you know, and then we go one-on-one, like, what are you seeing? What did you see? What do you think? You know, a couple like me, after catching whatever how many card counters, the table game shift managers wanted me to go over and be a floor person for them. You know, they're like, man, you should come work for us. You know, but we can't switch over. So I thought about it. I'm like, man, floor person. I'm like, no, because then, like I say, you stay in one place.
You
I don't
can wear these cool looking suits, though.
Yeah. Actually, don't the dealers make more money than the floor people?
So. And my whole thing was, I'm just going to watch six games in surveillance. You can watch the whole casino.
Yeah.
You can watch all the pretty girls. Yeah. All right. So in your sports betting, if your wife listens to this broadcast and she responds to that, I am not interested in being any kind of witness in divorce proceedings. That was just a joke. I have no knowledge of what you did on your work. I apologize. Okay. When you were sports betting, what kind of promotions did you find? I've heard other people say this last year was pretty good for sportsbook promotions.
This year was the first year I actually, you know, came out to Vegas for some promotions. When Circa first opened, they had the no vig promotions. So I came out that I came out here with a bunch of cash and hit that pretty good to try to, you know, bet both sides on some games, try to middle, you know, with no vig or take plus EV bets at no vig. So I came out for that, and that's where I met a lot of people that I know now. My network of, let's just say, professional gamblers or professional sports bettors. And then, so that was...
How did that happen? Just sort of being at the sports book, hanging out?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it happened. We were just at the sports book, hanging out. And it was the day before the Golden Nugget had their college football games of the year. That's where it actually occurred. And then the next day, we saw the same people at Circa. So it's like, oh, you know. So the Golden Nugget also had their college football games of the year. So I was coming out for that.
What is college football games of the year?
The director, I forget his name, they pick out, let's say, probably like 30 games for the whole season, and they put the spreads up for those games. So if you're a good handicapper... And
the spreads up in September for these games up until December.
Exactly. So,
So you do lose, you do have to put the money up now, and some of the bets aren't decided for 2 or 3 months.
Exactly.
And yeah, but you're locking in a price for something that can change dramatically over those.
Yeah. The max bet was 500, so it was a little disappointing, but I'll take it. And then the World Series of Poker was on at the same time, so that, you know, so I was playing poker and then I came to both of those at the same time. So it worked out perfectly. And yeah, and I met guys that I you know, thank God I met, because I thought I was at one level, and now they brought me up to another level with when it comes to sports betting. So yeah, everything works
any,
out.
Any form of professional gambling, your network just is so important, integral to being successful at whatever form of gambling.
100%, yeah. And now, like, yeah, my network went from 2 to now it's like 6, 7. You know, and we're talking about really, really sharp guys when it comes to sports. So it's awesome.
Asian baseball. What is that? How do you make money there?
Man. Asian baseball, yeah, that was the best. I found this one sports book that was off like 50 cents on Asian baseball.
Wow.
Yeah, it was when I saw it, I could not believe it. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy. And I had good limits and I was able to.
Was this a bookie?
It was a offshore. Yeah. Offshore bookie. One of the paperhead sites. So local bookie. And he was off by miles. So at first I was like, let me arbitrage this. And then I arbitrage. I'm like, wait, what am I doing? Why am I arbitraging this? You know, just give me the dog. Yeah. So I was just betting the dog every single time. And it took him a while because I was putting in football plays in there, you know, to try to mask everything. And I was betting the other side of the football. So I was just trying to profit on the Asian baseball on that site. So hoping the football lost. So, you know, and it worked out some weeks. I would lose and I just break it in with Asian baseball. Yeah, I didn't even know about Asian baseball till I was combing through the website, you know, and because I have like multiple of accounts. So I would go every morning, go to Starbucks, boom, let's open up all the accounts, see who's off on numbers and MLB, you know, strikeouts over under, this guy's off by a lot, you know, so I bet here. And just like that, just opening up every single account, every single sport, I ran into Asian baseball and I was just like, this is it.
You don't know any of the players?
I don't know any of the players, but I know the teams now. I don't like it was the funniest thing. I was telling my guys at where I work at as a prop player, and they're laughing. They're like, oh my gosh, because one of the guys knew all the Asian teams. I'm like, yeah, the Tigers, and yeah. It was funny. And he finally backed me off after the season ended. He's like, man, I don't know what you're doing. And the Texans are funny. They're like, the site runner claims that you have like 160 accounts and then you're in with the odds makers. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I got one account on this site. Like, and he's like, I'm sorry, but we can't take your action anymore. I'm like, it's okay, you know, thanks anyways.
So it's very much like for blackjack players, if you travel the world, you know, event once in a while, you're going to walk into a gold mine somewhere. And the same thing happens if you're a sports bettor, but instead of having to do all the traveling, you can do it in your underwear on your couch, yep. Traveling from site to site. But you have to take the time to go look at all those obscure things like Asian baseball.
100%. Yeah, it took me a while, you know, and all those props I'm betting, it's not easy to sit there and bet over under on strikeouts, you know. And open up every single website and look what, you know, who's off and who's not off. You know, you already know site X is off on strikeouts. Site Y is off on other things. You know, so
yeah,
it's a grind and a hustle for sure.
So you mentioned that you're a prop bettor. Now, if you can be placed on games where you're pretty good at that game, this can be a very lucrative thing. If you have to go into they need a body on a game that you're not a pro at, it can be a very expensive hobby. So how do you keep it under the games that you're good at?
Luckily for me, my casino averages one game a day.
Oh, so it's a small place. And
yeah, so all I'm playing is low limit, no limit hold'em. And now, just BSing with all the dealers and stuff, you know.
So it sounds like this is more of a social thing than you can't need the money that you're making.
No, yeah, definitely. I'm there. As soon as I get there, give me the controller. Boom, 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 boom. Switch all the TVs. and I'm hanging out at the podium, you know, checking people in. And they'll be like, hey, we need you at, you know, jump in. There's two seats open. So I only jump in when there's two seats or more. So, yeah, it's more like a social thing, like I said, is to get out of the house and have some kind of schedule, you know. And they pay you hourly. So you get paid hourly and you win.
You can say, I can't work when there's NFL and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So they're flexible enough.
Exactly.
With you
to... Like the last four Fridays, I didn't go in, you know, because of the sports, of the super contest. Don't even put me down for Friday because I got to do all my homework. He's like, don't worry about it.
So are you betting everything, basically? Basketball, Asian baseball, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, we're betting everything right now, yeah. Pretty much everything. Speaking about that, I forgot I got to call in today. Because I told him, I'm like, hey, man, I'm not going to be able to make it in on Friday. I'm going to call in. He's like, yeah, don't worry about it.
Pretty good. How did you get the name The Heist?
My old manager that worked at the place I'm working at now. It's funny because we're doing fantasy football with all the dealers there, and somehow I drafted like the best lineup possible. I had Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, Juju Schuster, it's like this good running back. And he's like, man, how are you like 7-0? I'm like, look at my lineup. He's like, did you rob these guys blind or something? And then he's like, I'm going to call you The Heist. And after that, it just stuck.
Yeah, that wasn't this year. Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger was on the bench. Antonio Brown's out of football.
Yeah, that was last year, and I won it. I think I lost like twice. It was a great lineup, and that name was funny. We all started laughing.
Very good. So, thank you, Mr. The Heist. This has been fun.
No worries. Thank you, guys, and it's an honor to be here. Pleasure.
So, at this time of the show, usually Richard and I talk about a section that we call recommendations. So mine today is a repeat, but something is coming up in that both Richard and I play is the right word, in an improvisational group. And we're going to be performing on January 18th. It's a Saturday. So the details are at lvimprov.com. It'll set you back $10. If you're a veteran, half that. If you're under 21, well, you shouldn't be listening to this show anyway if you're under 21. But it's a lot of fun. We'd love to have an audience of people that are friends or people who would like to be friends. Richard, you got anything for us this time?
I have two, actually, because one of them isn't going to apply to everybody. The first one is, if you are 62 and above...
I qualify.
I don't. I'm 29. But if you are, you can get a National Parks Pass, mm-hmm, that is good for life. Mm-hmm. And here in Las Vegas, that includes Red Rock, and it includes Lake Mead. And so you can get into any national park for free by buying a National Parks Pass. So it is absolutely quite a deal.
By free, you mean your car gets in for free.
Your car, right. And there can be, I think, four people in the car. You might have to pay if there's more than four.
Mm-hmm.
But many of our listeners are not 62, so I thought I would give a second one that can apply to everybody. It's an article called 52 Things I Learned in 2019. And the author of this article writes this article every year, and it's got all kinds of weird little facts that he accumulated during the course of the year. And one of those is quite interesting, and that is about how a guy basically eats for free in New York City because of his Instagram account.
Yeah, I heard of this.
And he set up this Instagram account, and now, admittedly, he knows some coding, so he wrote some Python code where he basically scours the internet, picks up pictures of New York City, reposts them on his Instagram with proper accreditation of the person who the photo belongs to, but it got him 25,000 followers. So when he wants to go eat somewhere, he sends an email to the restaurant and says, hey, here's my Instagram account. I have 25,000 followers. Do you have any kind of a discount or a coupon for me? And invariably, they let him eat for free. And so it's very expensive to eat in New York City. And this guy has found a way to eat at all these really nice places for free.
And he'll take pictures when he's there.
Yeah, he'll take pictures of the place and post about it. Yeah. But I thought, you know, this is a real AP move, right?
Exactly.
I'm trying to talk my son into doing this for Las Vegas, so...
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so that's my recommendation for this week. And there will be a link to the article in the show notes.
Very good. Thank you, The Heist. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.